This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing our regular landlord-tenant laws, issues and disputes, which we try to do about every 6 weeks or so. For those of you who listen to us live, you'll have a chance to call in, ask some questions, make some comments, etc., etc. My guests are landlord-tenant attorneys James Corey Driscoll, who represents tenants and has law offices in San Francisco, and Mark Seidenfeld, who represents landlords and tenants and has offices in San Bruno. For those of you who are listening to us live, and I hope those of you who are going to hear this program delayed also were aware, this is also our Call a Lawyer Night. We're doing a special Call a Lawyer Night landlord-tenant program. That number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. You'll be able to talk with a couple of really experienced landlord-tenant attorneys off the air, no obligation. It's a great public service. While we are doing this on the air, and you'll have a chance to talk to my guests on the air, I want to find out from Mark and Coy, anything special happened in the last few weeks with regard to landlord-tenant law?
Well, in San Francisco, yes, there was an amendment to the rent ordinance regarding buyouts that the notice has to be given before the buyout negotiations begin, and then the terms of the buyout as to the landlord and the dollar amount must be made public but not the name of the tenant. And there was litigation filed earlier this month, an attempt to stop it, and as far as I know, there's been no injunction at this point.
This is only as to San Francisco, though.
Yes.
It's not happening yet in other parts of California, as far as you know?
That's correct.
Okay. Do you think this will happen?
No.
No. Why do you say that, Mark?
It discriminates between landlords and tenants. It exposes the landlord's name, the amount of money that he's willing to pay, but the tenant, that person's name is sealed, redacted, the rent board says. The rent board is not even enforcing it at this point. They haven't even drawn up the forms that people are supposed to fill out to do this. So as of right now, people are proceeding under the old rules.
No kidding. This is very interesting. Very interesting that this is happening.
Well, I think the reason is there's a innate disparity of power between the landlords and the tenants, and a lot of times the tenants don't realize that they have rights to not be forced out of their long-term homes, and this is yet another attempt to sort of even the playing field.
What are the rules, the game rules for buyout? What is a landlord, at least under San Francisco rules, rent board rules. What does he, she, or they have to do?
Well, the bottom line. Okay. Well, first of all, there has to be just cause, and the ordinance sets out, I believe, it's 16 different bases that are just cause. The first five or six are basically that you're doing something wrong, not paying the rent, violating the rental agreement. The others include. The owner allegedly wants to move in. The owner allegedly wants to take the entire building, out of residential rental service. They want to do substantial renovations. That's showing a temporary one. But the general rule is, and there's exceptions, that the landlord has to pay a figure. It's adjusted every year, but it's $5,000-something per person, not more than three times that. And then as to every person in the household who's disabled, another figure that's, again, adjusted, that's right now $3,000-something. So, you know, that's the floor of the negotiations, because even if a tenant fights, takes it through, in my case, when I defend these, darn near a year of litigation. Expensive and painful litigation, that the landlords still have to going to, even if they win the lawsuit, they're still going to have to pay that amount. So, which is why landlord, through their attorneys, often willing to negotiate and pay, I mean, I've had people pay $150,000 to get my clients out.
Oh, my goodness.
Like the label says, this is not your usual result, but, you know, $30,000 to $50,000 is.
Is it, how is this different from the Ellis Act?
Well, the Ellis Act is part of that. The Ellis Act is
when... That's a state law, is it not?
Right. And the... but under the rent ordinance, if they want to do the Ellis Act, they have to pay the numbers we're talking about.
I see.
I was going to add that what Coy said is correct, but there are cases that have nothing to do with just cause, where a landlord and a tenant simply agree, the landlord wants to rent it back,
that's
and the landlord is willing to pay.
Contract between them both.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what this is attempting, I think, to really regulate, as opposed to the just cause evictions, which are public already.
Right, and I think that the problem with those supposed willing agreements is quite often they're not willing, that they're not informed that the tenants, especially when you're dealing with immigrant population, if you're dealing with people who are not native English speakers, who are not perhaps familiar with the fact that tenants in the United States, and particularly in San Francisco, have rights, they might think that if the landlord says, here's $100, you need to leave next week, they will. And sign whatever they're told.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
I have to disagree. I don't think there's any tenant in San Francisco that is not aware of his rights, much more so than the landlords are. And I also have to address the balance of power issue. The fact that a landlord has to pay $100,000 to recover a unit says that the tenant is in the driver's seat, not the landlord. That's what it says to me.
And, you know, it may depend, as they say, on whose ox is being gored, but certainly without rent control, the landlord is absolutely in control.
Oh, you're right. Absolutely.
Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco and the San Mateo County Bar Association. All right, everybody. It is our Call a Lawyer night for landlord-tenant issues. We have a couple of very fine people with us to do this, Jessica Chilek and Sal Timpano, who are very experienced landlord-tenant attorneys. If you'd like to talk with them off the air, it's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. This is a public service on their part, and there's no obligation on your part if you call in and talk with them off the air. They're very happy to talk with you. They're performing a very important public service. If you would like to speak with my guests on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134, and I welcome you to call in as soon as you can. All right, everybody. We've talked about just cause. We've talked about some big numbers here, and pretty scary.
I don't think the numbers that Coy was talking about are the normal numbers. I think it's much more normal for 20,000, 15,000.
Is that because Coy is abnormal? Or
absolutely.
I couldn't miss that one.
I won't step into that one. No. I mean, there's
I'll
a difference.
To it.
it makes all the difference in the world who your lawyer is.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you get what you pay for. I hate to say it, but it's true.
Go ahead.
I'm being a Weisenheimer.
Okay. All right. So this change in the law? And so you said, Mark, that the rent board, San Francisco Rent Board, was not yet enforcing this?
It was supposed to be effective February 1st.
Oh.
But they haven't even prepared the forms that they're requiring landlords to fill out. At least as of the program
why
the bar
that?
Had a couple of weeks ago.
Why is that?
Well, they're not sure it's legal, number one. And number two, typically these things are passed with an effective date that gives them time to prepare.
Well, you would think so.
Well,
sure.
This is San Francisco. Nothing is the way it is elsewhere. Let's put it that way.
Incredible. Well, we're going to take a call in just another minute. I want to let you know that additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. And we've got a number of people who want to talk with you, and I'm looking forward to... Let's see, we've got Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing, sir?
All right, thank you. How are you, Bill?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. I rent a legal subdivision, I guess you would call it, in San Francisco. And we have a little backyard. It's a converted garage. We're hoping it'll get approved by the state before, by the city before long. But basically, I'm a medical marijuana patient, and I smoke my medicine in the backyard, and the neighbors have been complaining, and they've asked us to stop doing that. Is that, our landlord has to stop doing that. Is that legal? Am
wow.
I right here?
Wow, that's very interesting. So just so that we understand, the yard where you are smoking your medical approved marijuana, or at least the recommendation by your doctor for smoking marijuana for health purposes, is this a yard that is also used by other tenants in the area?
No, it's only used by me, but they're in San Francisco, they're small yards.
I see.
The smell wafts into
okay.
other people.
I gotcha. Let me get some comments. One of the things, Bill, that I want to let you know about is with a question like this, you are asking for specific legal advice. The state bar does not permit my guests to give specific legal advice, but what we generally try to do is to get some comments to try to give you some direction of what you may do or where you may go to try to help you, because obviously this is a significant issue for you. Mark, you want to respond, I think.
Sure. The problem with it is there's really no definitive answer. In my opinion, if the other tenants are complaining that you are creating a nuisance, that would give the landlord grounds to evict you. The fact that you have a medical prescription, I don't think would authorize you to create a nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a question of fact. It's a question of degree. How bad is it? Is it really a nuisance? I don't think the landlord on his own can say stop, because it is legal under California law what you're doing. But if the other tenants make a fuss, I think the landlord would feel compelled to act.
What do you think?
Well, I think the term nuisance gets overused by landlords and their attorneys. For a nuisance, as defined in the civil code, you have to have a substantial impairment of the use of the property. And the fact that there are some pot fumes in the open air, we're not talking about confined space, might be an annoyance to some people, but considering that it is not illegal in California, it may just be that the neighbors are going to have to get over themselves. And if I'm hearing the caller correctly, it doesn't sound like it's his fellow tenants that are complaining, but people on adjacent properties. So I think it would be they who would have to take action against the caller.
Let me ask you something, Bill. You're living in this garage. Who's living in the house?
Converted garage.
Okay, who's living in the house that the garage belongs to?
Oh, it's me and my roommate, and then it's the owner who lives above us, and they're the ones who asked us to stop after the complaints of the neighbors.
Okay, so
I'm assuming they've all been there for 30-plus years.
I gotcha.
Or okay. They all know each other very well. We're new.
So the owner lives in the upper floor, and the neighbors in the area have complained to the owner, so the owner has now told you've got to stop smoking your medical marijuana. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
That's
any correct. Other comments, Mark?
I just want to say the San Francisco rent ordinance talks about substantial interference with the comfort, safety, and quiet enjoyment of the other residents. And whether this amounts to that or not, I really think is a question of fact. How much smoke? How often? What can they do to stop it? If they just close their window, does the problem go away? Or is mm-hmm. it a worse problem than that? I really think you would benefit by talking to an attorney.
I absolutely agree with that. And the other thing is, since it is illegal to rent an illegal unit such as the garage, if you get into it with the landlord, I would hope that your lawyer would be pointing out to his lawyer his exposure for renting you an illegal unit, which could include both getting all your rent back and, if he didn't tell you it was illegal, punitive damages for fraud.
One of the things that I will let you know, Bill, as we continue with the program, I will give the phone number for the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco.
I really don't need a lawyer for this. I'm just kind of curious about where...
Bill, that is not a good comment for you to make. when you make a comment like that, considering if you are really smoking marijuana for health reasons, you do need to see a lawyer. Don't be silly. And if
Bill, stop.
Don't argue with me. We are trying to give you some help on this. And I think to pay something like $35 for a half an hour consultation with a landlord-tenant attorney is a great investment. So good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling. All right. We have got, let's see, Ken. Ken, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, quick comment, but I have a question here. I believe the Ellis Act payment in San Francisco is only about $5,500. And landlords would rather buy people out because once a house is Ellis, it can lower its resale value by 25%. So it's in their own interest to throw a lot of cash at the tenants to get them out of there because they're flipping for a big profit, and Ellis cuts into the profit. So I actually have a question.
Okay, go ahead, Ken.
Capital improvements. Okay. Landlord last year put out a bunch of capital improvements pass-throughs. He can pass through, I believe, 50%.
You're now talking about the rent ordinance, are you not?
I am talking about the rent ordinance,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So the landlord can pass through amounts, and this is what happened in my case. Hot water heater that was 8 years old and was actually leaking on the floor. He passed that through. Paint job when he was trying to sell the building during the, you know, lousy period, circa 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Bathroom replacements for bathrooms that were redone that were told that had to be redone when he bought the building, and a broken garage door from a tenant who crashed into it. Mm-hmm. Managed to pass that through to all of us. And for anyone who says the rent board or the thing is very tenant-centric, three of us tenants went down to the rent board, protested, photographs, actual building code evidence that the work done for these three shower replacements. They replaced the tile with a plastic tub enclosure.
Don't give us all the details, Ken. Get down to your question, Richard.
Well, anyway, the brass tax is... The rent board looks at a replaced hot water heater, no matter how old it is, as an improvement, mm-hmm. not a repair.
Uh-huh.
To me, it's broken, it's a repair. Mm-hmm. The repair is the replacement of it because nobody repairs an 8-year-old hot water heater, that the rent board passes it through.
Is there a question in there?
Yeah. The question is, how can I prove as a tenant when landlord has a 5-year window to pass these things through, he next says to us, very arrogantly, I won in the last three improvements. I'm going to replace the roof, and I'm passing that through to you guys,
Whoa.
Too.
Is that the latest, or are you just assuming he's going to say that?
No, he says that.
He says that. Okay.
Yeah,
if
no,
you would do this,
that,
if, Ken,
you know,
Ken.
I won, you guys lost, and I'm going to pass through this, too. So how, as a tenant, can I prove that working on your old building for repairs that it needs anyway is really not an improvement, but closer to a repair.
Ken, I want you to stop and turn your radio back on so you can hear my guests respond to your comments, your questions, etc. Thank you very much for calling, Ken. Yeah, Coy.
Well, as it turns out, I recently did look at this issue, and the rent board, in their wisdom, has certain things that they consider eligible for pass-throughs. I might tend to agree with the caller, but unfortunately, the way the rent board looks at it, I believe rent roof replacements, not partial repairs, but replacements are painting the building is. The way you fight these is if they gilded the lily. If they did more than necessary, then you fight them on that basis. And if you want to spend few tens of thousands of dollars on me or one of my colleagues, what you do is you take a writ from the rent board's decision to the Court of Appeals and lose.
Mm.
My response is that every single one of those things that Ken mentioned is a legitimate improvement. And I have news for him. Landlords do attempt to repair much older than 8 year mm-hmm. old water heaters. So the fact that it was replaced is a definite improvement, and it's to his advantage. The idea of the pass-through was a compromise when they enacted the rent control ordinance, recognizing landlords could not get fair market value of their property because of long-term tenants and rent control. So they want landlords to improve their properties, to make the properties better. That's part of being a landlord. It's better for the city. It's better for everyone. And they allow them to pass through half of the costs, only half.
Okay.
And it has to be amortized over a period of years. This is not a boondoggle for landlords.
How many years does it have to be amortized?
I believe it's five.
5 years. Yeah. And what recommendation do either of you have for Ken at this point? Is he just totally wrong in terms of his interpretation of what is going on here? Should he see an attorney, in your opinion, or does he really need to realize that the landlord is in the right position?
The rent board looks at these things very carefully. If they think that there's inflation, that the landlord is cheating, they send out their own estimators. They get their own estimates. They're not going to pass something that isn't legitimate. They just don't.
And the thing is, for example, if he were to want to fight the roof, go out, get some estimates from roofers, and if it's $20,000 that they're trying to pass through and the you get a couple of estimates that say $15,000 from competent roofers, then, yeah, there is padding going on.
All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night, landlord-tenant law. And what I'd like to do is invite you to call in with your questions for our Call a Lawyer lawyers, Jessica Chilek and Sal Timpano, 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. We try to do a landlord-tenant call a lawyer about every 6 weeks or so. This is a public service on the part of these attorneys. They're very experienced. You have no obligation whatsoever when you talk with them. It's a public service that they're performing, and they like doing it. So that's, again, 1-800-525-9917. On the air, my guests, if you'd like to speak with them, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. Whether you are listening to us live in the Bay Area or on the internet at www.kalw.org, that's the same number for you to call if you want to speak to my guests on the air. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing our regular landlord-tenant laws, issues, and disputes program. My guests are Mark Seidenfeld and Coy Driscoll, James Coy Driscoll, who are very experienced landlord-tenant attorneys. Mr. Driscoll principally, I think, and maybe exclusively, represents only tenants.
Yes.
Mr. Seidenfeld represents landlords and tenants, but not in the same case.
Exactly.
All right. So who do we have? We have now Julie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure. You're on the air.
I have been a subtenant for 6 years, and I've never seen a lease, and I only give my rent to the master tenant every month, and I am also permanently disabled. And our so I live on SSDI, and our landlord is in his 90s, and he's already lost his partner, who is the co-owner of the building we live in, and he's not well. So I'm wondering, have I waived my rights by not signing a lease with the landlord, or have I waived my rights by simply giving my rent to the master tenant and not giving it directly to the landlord? And can I, from this point forward, start giving it to the landlord?
Now, how long have you been living there, Julie?
6 years.
6 years. And does the landlord know, does this gentleman, the landlord who's in his 90s, know that you are living there?
Yes, he calls me his tenant's friend. That's how he, you're her friend. That's how he refers to me.
I see.
But I'm actually a real subtenant. I've been living here for 6 years. And
okay.
Let me
get some comments for you. Who would like to start on this?
Okay.
Coy, who represents tenants. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, you do have an interesting protection in that unless the person from whom you're renting, called the master tenant, advised you in writing before you moved in that the just cause provisions of the rent ordinance do not apply, then they do apply. And since most of the non-fault reasons to try to evict a tenant by a landlord can't be done by a master tenant, such as owner move-in, Ellis Act, that sort of thing. As to your master tenant, you're seriously in the catbird seat. You're in a great position. What is going to be interesting, hopefully not interesting, but could be, is if either the present owner or the subsequent owner attempted to get rid of the master tenant. I take the position that the master tenant has an obligation to continue to provide you with the space until such time as he or she terminates your tenancy, but they usually don't have that deep a pocket. So, but on the other hand, they can't get you out they can't get the apartment back empty without your consent and without you voluntarily moving out. So there would be some payment to you if they tried to do a buyout of the master.
I would disagree, unfortunately.
That's the law for you.
What Coy pointed out is your vulnerable spot, and that is if the master tenant gets into some beef with the landlord and ends up getting evicted, because you have no status with the landlord, the entire unit's going to be emptied.
Hmm.
Having put that on the side, though, as far as the master tenant goes, what Coy said is also correct. He has no real grounds to evict you unless you obviously stop paying your rent or something like that. But as far as the landlord goes, your only real issue there is if there's a problem with the master tenant, between the master tenant and the landlord.
Wait, and just to follow up on what Mark said, I'm not talking about where the master tenant stopped paying rent. I'm talking about where the landlord said, oh, we want to do an Ellis Act or an owner move-in, and they'd need to get you voluntarily out of there to avoid doing that, then you would have to be part of the payment equation.
Right, right.
Okay.
Okay. All right, okay, so should I start?
Julie, good luck to you.
Okay,
Good luck to you. Take care, and thank you very much for calling. We have a chance before the end of the half hour to take one further very short question. Dan, welcome to the program. You have about 30 seconds if you could pose your question.
Thank you. I'll try to be quick. I live in Redwood City in a below market rate unit. I'm mid-lease. About a week ago, they contacted me saying that they've apparently lost my below market rate paperwork and that they needed all of the paperwork by the next day. I was out of the town. I said they couldn't do that. My lease says that I have 1 week. After 2 or 3 days, they served me with a 3-day notice to quit for violating my lease. I emailed them back saying, I haven't violated my lease.
Dan, stop for a minute. Stay on the line. I want to get a very brief initial comment for you, and we'll come back to you after we have a break.
Great. Thank you.
Dan,
you need to speak to a tenant attorney immediately, because that 3-day notice is no good, but if you don't fight it, they will enforce their notice.
Agreed.
Okay.
Well, I think we realized.
All right. Hold on, Dan. It is 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station. This is KLW in San Francisco. Just to explain to all of you what's going on here. The first half hour is the statewide version of the program, and that's why, Dan, I asked you to hold on, and I realize you don't know how we do this program. This half hour is recorded. We then send it out to 15 other stations in California, which will air this the following week. So, Dan, hold on a minute, and then we'll get back to you in just a minute, okay? It is our Call a Lawyer night for landlord-tenant. We have two very fine attorneys here who are landlord-tenant attorneys, Sal Timpano and Jessica Chilek. If you'd like to speak with them off the air, no obligation on your part, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. On the air, if you'd like to talk with my guests, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134, and Dan will be back to you in just a moment. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. That's what I had in mind for Bill, by the way. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. Call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to get a human being. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area of your problem and set you up for a half an hour consultation with just minor dispute on this. Every lawyer referral service throughout California for a half an hour consultation will charge somewhere between $25 to $35. It's a great investment if you need it to get some basic information. Dan, back to you. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. And I did not know how the system...
No, I know you didn't. Go ahead.
So I understand that the three-day notice is invalid. I emailed them back explaining. I mean, they said that I'm violating the contract of my lease, and the clause is their address. It's just, it's unbelievable. So I would love to get a writ of attainder. I can fight that. Now they're telling me that they're kicking me out of the below market rate program. My real question is, what are my protections there? And because I am in a below market rate program, do I have any additional protections if they decide to go through the eviction process?
What city are you in, Dan?
I'm in Redwood City.
You are? Okay, that's right. You did mention that. Okay, let me start with Coy.
Dan, when you say they're kicking you out, what paperwork have they given you to that end?
They have not given me any paperwork.
Then it doesn't mean a darn thing.
Well, but they may give him something.
Well, they may, but until they do, you know, I may sprout 2 feet and join the NBA, but I don't think it's going to happen. Now, but until it does, I'm not going to worry about it.
No, Dan, I seriously would urge you to go talk to an attorney immediately, because even if they're just making threatening noises at this point, if they do go ahead, you want to be aware of what your rights are. I am not familiar with the below market rent program in Redwood City, so I don't know if you would have any extra rights. But I can say that state law is very strongly pro-tenant. Despite what my colleague here says, they're not going to be able to evict you over something like you've mentioned.
So, you want the phone number again for the San Mateo County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service, Dan?
I have it.
You do, yeah. I mean, they're very consumer-oriented, obviously, and I think that you should get in touch with them and make an appointment. That's the best thing for you to do.
Yeah. And so, if I may, I don't disagree with what Mark said. I'm just saying that although you should talk to a lawyer, I don't think there's anything to worry about until you actually get some paperwork from them.
Good luck to you, Dan. Thanks for calling. By the way, for those of you who in San Mateo County and anyone who's interested in this, tomorrow, Thursday, March 19th, the San Mateo County Law Library is having a presentation that you're invited to at noon. It's free. It's entitled In Debt. DEBT, the basics of declaring bankruptcy. The attorney is Matthew Gretsch, who will discuss the basics of how to declare bankruptcy and the differences between Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. Again, the lecture is free. It's open to you. It'll be held in the San Mateo County Law Library, located at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. It's right across the street from the Hall of Justice. Bring your lunch. You're invited to bring your lunch and have it there. The presentation will be from noon until maybe 1 o'clock or so. If you'd like more information, the number is 650-363-4913. 650-363-4913. All right, this is Your Legal Rights. It's also our Call a Lawyer Night for landlord-tenant. And by the way, I want you to know we're doing our regular Call a Lawyer Night next week. The topic is going to be workers' compensation, and it's going to be a very interesting program, and it's going to be hosted by my very good friend Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. The topic is, of course, workers' compensation law, but the focus will be on gender bias in the workplace. And she's going to have a couple of very experienced workers' comp attorneys. And that will also be our regular Call a Lawyer Night, the 1-800-525-9917. All right. If you want to speak to my guests on the air, again, 1-415-841-4134. And we have, let's see, Ruth. Hi, Ruth.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, good evening. I have a rather broad question regarding...
Well, I hope it's not going to take too long.
No.
We don't like those broad questions.
Okay. It's a broad question regarding a landlord's obligation regarding dogs in San Francisco. And this is, what if dogs are okay within the building and then neighbors end up having sort of disputes regarding their dogs?
And the neighbors in the building?
Correct.
Does
the landlord have any sort of responsibility to, try to enforce something, or is this all about dogs and owners?
Would you do this, Ruth? Give us a simple example of what's the dispute between neighbors if dogs are allowed in the building. Give us an example of the dispute regarding a dog.
A dog that is large and sort of maybe somewhat ill-tempered, somewhat not in under great control of the owner, and another dog in the building, smaller, and there's a certain sort of threatening behavior going on between dogs. It's like,
gotcha.
The landlord's responsibility.
Okay, Ruth, gotcha. Mark wants a response.
This is another example of the joys of urban living.
Yes.
People live in close quarters and they have pets. Why, I don't know. Not a pet lover myself, but there it is. The bottom line is, it really depends on the circumstances of the case. If the tenants feel threatened, if the tenants who are complaining feel threatened somehow by the size of this dog or by its temperament, its behavior, then yes, they have a right to complain to the landlord, and in theory, the landlord should do something about it. I can tell you that most landlords are very reluctant to get involved in disputes between tenants. I mean, they may have an obligation to do so at some point if it presents a real danger, safety, something like this. But it's very likely that the landlord will say, go talk to the community boards, go do mediation, work something out. A tenant attorney might have to get involved and make the landlord do something. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that would be the landlord's typical reaction.
And I'll tell you, if I were representing the aggrieved tenant, I would be writing not only to the landlord and pointing out, as Mark just alluded to, his responsibility, but I would also be writing to the other tenant and pointing out their liability for their dog's misbehavior. And
which could be some very expensive veterinarian bills if the big dog hurt the little dog.
My experience with this kind of thing is it's a matter of degree, and it's extremely subjective.
Yeah.
I may think, it's a small little dog, doesn't bother anybody, and you as my neighbor may say it's a frightening, vicious beast.
This little tiny dog is a frightening yowl.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tough problem. It really is.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, and so there's no clear distinction of the landlord's responsibility if the landlord says it's okay to have dogs.
Well, no, the landlord does have an obligation to provide peaceful, quiet enjoyment of the premises to all the tenants.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that is being interfered with, then the landlord does have a responsibility to do something about it. But as I say, it's a question of degree and proof, and you could testify to this and your neighbor could testify to that.
Yeah.
It's a tough decision.
But in the end, isn't it, if you have these two neighbors, and they own dogs, shouldn't they be talking to one another?
Well, of course.
That'd be optimal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One of the things that I think is very important, and Mark mentioned it just a few minutes ago, through the and Ruth, you're talking about this. You're talking about San Francisco, were you
correct.
Not? Yeah.
Correct.
You know, there's a very good mediation program through the San Francisco District Attorney's Office that's available. But Mark, you also mentioned
the community boards.
The community boards, which also has it's a wonderful outfit that has an office in San Francisco. Historically, they have helped a lot of people trying to resolve these problems. And I think if your friend, because I know, Ruth, you live in Berkeley, do you not?
No, I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
You are not the Ruth who calls me from time to time?
No, I am not.
Isn't that funny? You sound like that same woman. Okay. Pardon me. Her name is Ruth Ann. But you sound a little like her. Okay. Well, then I think what you should do is, talk with your friend about trying to get this mediated.
Okay.
And I think, frankly, the landlord should be involved with this mediation. It should be the tenants who are involved. It should be the landlord. And I think you'll find that the mediation is probably quite reasonable.
I would just add that it's either free or low cost.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
In addition, you definitely should let the landlord know so the landlord has an idea what's going on and doesn't get surprised 6 months from now with a claim that somebody's been injured. At least he'll be on notice.
Yeah. Yeah, the landlord needs to be very aware of what's going on. Ruth, good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, take care. Thank you very much for calling. All right, it is our Call a Lawyer, Landlord Tenants. Our landlord-tenant attorneys, are they still conscious back there? They haven't been overwhelmed yet, Martin, by the calls. I guess Martin's overwhelmed, actually. You can't even hear me. All right, 1-800-525-9917 if you want to talk with them off the air. If you want to talk with my guests on the air, 1-415-841-4134. Very knowledgeable landlord-tenant attorneys, James Coy Driscoll, whose office is in San Francisco, and Mark Seidenfeld, whose office is in San Bruno. These gentlemen are truly gentlemen. There's been no blood spilled in here yet.
The evening is young.
Yeah, the evening is young. Okay. All right, so join us if you would. Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, Kate. Go ahead.
I'll try and make this quick. I've been living in a Berkeley apartment for over 15 years. My landlord for most of that time gave up the place, is now taken over last January by a woman. And ever since she has taken the property, she's made it kind of hell.
Ooh.
for many of us here.
That's a shame.
In a small compound. We have taken her to the rent board. We've done a hearing. We had a settlement, even though I didn't really feel it was really fulfilling. We went through that whole process. We were hoping that this would stop her kind of harassment. Everything is legal that she's doing in terms of harassing, but it still, in my view, is harassment.
Would you give us a simple example? What is the harassment?
Well, for example, the latest thing is I am allowed to have the basement storage, and now she's telling me what I need to get rid of. She's trying to decide not only how much space, which I can kind of understand that, but she's telling me I have to get rid of certain things.
So that there can be more space for other tenants. Is that what she's claiming?
That's the claim.
Yeah.
But I don't think she has a right, for example, to tell me what to get rid of. And it's just every single month there's something.
I see.
I could go through a whole list.
I wish we could, but we can't. Let me have Mark Seidenfeld respond first.
A question is, what she's asking you to get rid of something that is inherently dangerous in some way, or that's disturbing other people?
No. I have tables that I use, and because she doesn't like them, she wants me to get rid of them.
I don't think she has the right to do that.
No.
I don't
Thank
see
you.
Under what grounds she would have for doing that. As long as you're in your space, what you put in there, as long as it's not dangerous or bothering other people, seems to me it would be fine.
My question is, how do I get her to stop?
Do you have any in your apartment or your unit? Do you have any duct tape? Do you have any duct tape there?
I do.
That's what you do. You put the duct tape on her mouth.
I have a better suggestion, Chuck.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
I think a strongly worded letter from an attorney saying, stop harassing my client or else, may have a salutary effect. I hate to say that, but if she's really causing that much trouble over things that sounds meaningless, that might be the answer.
You know, I want Kate, and then Coy will come on. I want Kate to understand that comment that Mark just made is from a man who I think principally represents landlords. So what he's saying to you is very significant.
I've represented probably thousands of landlords over the years, and the average landlord doesn't want to be bothered by their tenants or deal with their tenants. All they want is to get a rent check once a month, and they don't care about all this. So there's something else going on here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She wants to get me out so she can...
Oh, well, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the elephant in the room that nobody's talking about.
Yeah.
And even if she did have the right to make this change, she would have to give proper notice under the civil code of change of terms of tenancy. Now, I'm not as familiar with the Berkeley ordinance as I am with San Francisco, which prohibits evictions for most involuntary changes, but regardless, she would have to give notice. So if she's telling you things verbally, I would tend to... Well, I agree with what Mark said. Get a lawyer.
And do I have to pay for that? Is the other
yes.
question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you will, but it's not going to be much because you're talking, I really think one strong letter will probably put the fear of God into your landlord and make her stop or at least hesitate.
Can I compose part of that letter?
You can, but it really should come from a lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can suggest some language that you feel you'd like the lawyer to take a look at, and that would be helpful to the lawyer, I would think.
Landlords react differently when they get a letter from a lawyer as opposed to a tenant.
Good luck to you, Kate.
Okay, thanks so much.
Take care. Okay. By the way, in case you'd like to know, the Alameda County Bar Association lawyer referral number, if you've not used a lawyer before, is 510-302-2222. 510-302-2222, which is the Alameda Bar Association, and ask for lawyer referral. All right. It is still our Call a Lawyer night, landlord-tenant. And I want to thank very much Jessica Chilek, whose office is in San Francisco, and Sal Timpano, whose office is in San Francisco also, for being here and being so gracious with their time. If you'd like to talk with either of them off the air, no obligation on your part, it's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. We're going to take another call now from, I think it's Ellen. Ellen, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi there.
My issue is that myself and my husband all live in a commercial unit in the gentrifying Mission, and my husband runs a small guitar shop in the front of the unit, and we all live in the back. We have the landlord actually built us a little apartment in the back so we could live here. We've been paying a reasonable rent, and all of a sudden they have sent us a notice that says that our rent is going up by $2,000.
But by $2,000? Does that include the commercial area?
Well, it's all one unit.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
And it's all one unit, and yes. And it is a commercial lease. The landlord has always known we live here. And we have actually found some emails that show they know, such as mentioning bedrooms and getting a hotel for me because there was mold. So my husband's been kind of bargaining with them and explaining, and we actually did file a petition with the rent board. And they are responding to some of the bargainings. They brought down the rent increase to only $800 only.
Oh.
Yeah, right. And yeah. So we want to know what are our chances? What's going on here?
Okay, all right. Again, I think, Ellen, you really need to speak face-to-face with an attorney. This is not something that you can take. I mean, my guests are very experienced, but they cannot give you specific legal advice. They can give you some direction, but you've got to go to at least either someone who's had an attorney, landlord-tenant attorney, that would recommend that person to you, or call the lawyer referral service in San Francisco. But Coy, or Coy, go ahead.
Ellen. In a position like this, I would start out certainly saying that the whole unit is a residential unit, because basically under the rent ordinance, it doesn't matter what you call it. Mm. It doesn't matter what it's zoned for. If it is used as a residence and it is known to the landlord, he, she, or it. The corporation, is stuck with that designation. And I heartily agree with what Chuck was saying. You really do need to talk with a tenant's attorney. I understand your husband may be trying to, you know, do the do-it-yourself thing and work everything out, but you know, this is a fairly complicated area, and you're talking about something very important. And I'm sure if you had a serious medical condition, you wouldn't be trying to figure it out yourself. You'd go see a doctor. Well, mm-hmm. likewise, you really, really do need to talk to a tenant's lawyer about this.
What kind of lawyer?
tenant.
A tenant lawyer.
You're a tenant. You're a tenant, Ellen.
Yes, I am. I know.
Not a landlord.
Oh, God.
Not a guitar. You may be a guitar player, but we're not talking about the guitar players. We're talking about tenants.
Right.
So, really, like Chuck said, talk to a tenant's lawyer. Make an appointment, whether it's, you know, some, like Chuck said, through a referral or going to the lawyer referral service. But, you know, you really need professional help with this.
Okay. Ellen, I'm going to suggest to you further, because you have some other issues. For our Call a Lawyer night, I don't know if you tried reaching the 800 number, 800-525-9917. You might also, because I want to try to take a couple more calls on the air, you might try to also talk to either now Jessica Chilick or Sal Timpano. They're both very experienced, and you know, discuss with them a little bit more on 1-800-525-9917. Good luck to you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, now we have Colin. Welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hi.
Love listening to your show. I really appreciate it. I hopefully would like to try to slip in two, but you know, it goes. I'm a longtime renter in Oakland. Recently, about 2.5 months ago, my landlord handed me a letter telling me that he was going to raise the rent the next month. It equaled approximately 31% raise.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I talked to a lawyer friend of mine. I went to the Rent Adjustment Board in Oakland, got a bunch of paperwork, and between the two of us, we sent you can't do more than currently 3 times the CPI, Consumer Price Index, on a rental raise, which equated, well, anyway. So we told him that basically his rental raise was void. Was no good.
We got it. Go ahead.
And but what I've been doing is I figured out what 3 times the my current rent was, or 3 times the CPI.
Consumer price index, yes.
It's like 5.7, I think, currently, and added that to what my current rent was, and I've been paying that. I don't give him a check directly. I deposit it into his account.
Do you keep a receipt?
Yes, I keep my receipts.
Good.
Yeah. And so I actually did call the Alameda Bar Association. They tried to refer me to. They said they have 2 tenant lawyers, but neither of them would take it. Now they don't tell me why. They don't say it's either because they're too busy or because they don't want the case or they're understaffed or whatever. They just.
What is it you would like them to do?
Well, I'm a little, you know, I'm worried about him retaliating or trying to do something.
Let me get some comments for you, starting with Mark Seidenfeld.
Did I understand you to say that you voluntarily are paying a rent increase that was not legally imposed on you?
No, I'm not saying that. He tried to impose a 31%
rent
increase.
Right, but didn't you say you're voluntarily increased at 5.7% yourself?
No, 3 times that.
Yes, that he had not raised the rent for like 8 years, and he told me verbally that he was trying to do it retroactively. And when I saw the price, the increased amount, I kind of balked at it, and so I started doing my research, and I decided that it would be in good faith to accept a rent raise. Considering the rent that I'm paying.
Colin, I'm going to jump in right here. This is Coy. There is no reason on God's green earth for you to raise your own rent.
Exactly.
Colin,
just stop talking and let Coy talk, please.
There is no reason for you to raise your rent. The idea that a landlord's going to be happy with that and act in good faith is misguided. What you really need to do is go back, find a tenant's lawyer, see if you can back out of this rent increase, and if your landlord wants to raise your rent and wants to do it legally, let him. But until that, you're with respect, you're crazy to pay increased rent.
I absolutely agree, and I would add that not only was that notice no good under the Oakland Rent Ordinance, it was no good under state law. Anything 10% or higher has to have a 60-day notice, not a 30-day notice.
Yeah.
So
I understand both of those points, and I was paying under market value, and the CPI index increase was still an affordable, and I hear what you're saying, and I thought as a show of good faith, it would be perhaps maybe a good way to.
I understand what you're saying, but it's an error. You should not be doing that. In effect, you've raised your own rent, and you shouldn't do it. You're helping the landlord, and he hasn't been exactly nice and sweet to you.
No,
so why would you do that?
Hasn't been.
Get a lawyer. Get a lawyer.
Now, I have one other question.
Very quickly, please.
Two duplexes on one property owned by the same guy that all used to be Section 8. All but one now is Section 8, and should I do anything if I think that he is perhaps pulling a scam with the last existing Section 8 tenants with through the government? Like, he might be. Because he helped them with his paperwork when he was about to kick them out, and it really feels like he might be doing some underhanded kind of thing.
That's not going to help you in one bit.
No, I realize that.
And it's none of your business.
I would agree.
I think your co-tenant or the tenant that you're referring to also needs to see a lawyer through the lawyer referral service, Colin. Thank you very much for calling. Take care. Hope this has helped to some degree. Francoise, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Mine two are very, very quick.
Sure.
One is a question regarding notice for entry. So I know that there was a case last year that talked about notice of entry and that realtors, for instance, have non-regular business hours and they can go in on the weekends, et cetera, you know, so long as they give the proper notice of entry. I'm wondering if the statute has ever changed or if there's any case law to discuss the manner of the delivery of the entry. So, for instance, if a landlord has a dialogue with their tenants on the email, may they attach to an email the notice of entry request, or must it be posted on the door or mailed to person?
Oh, that's interesting. All right, let me get some comments. Turn your radio back up, Francoise, for the comment.
My understanding is as long as they give the appropriate notice, I don't think the statute says how it has to be given. I'm not aware of it anyway.
Well, yet it does say usually it has to be in writing, and it does say if it's posted, it's 24 hours, and I believe it adds 5 days if it's mailed or at least a couple of days. So I don't think email is good news. However, the statute also provides that if the place is up for sale for about 3 or 4 months after that, they can give oral notice. And I know that case you're talking about came out of Southern California. In my humble opinion, it's very poorly decided, and it might be able to be distinguished on its facts.
In my opinion, would be that email notice, it's in writing, it would be good. But for me, the big thing is the amount of time. It should be at least 24 hours. I tell my landlords, make it 48 hours if at all possible, and they usually do.
I want to thank you both for joining us on the program.
Always a pleasure.
Great to have you here. My guests have been Mark Seidenfeld and James Coy Driscoll, both very, very experienced attorneys. Again, at the end of the program, no blood was spilled, folks, so this is very positive.
Last chance.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate you both coming here.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. This segment of Your Legal Rights was funded by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Next week, I'm going to take an evening off, and my very good friend, Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, will be the host of the program. The topic will be workers' compensation law, gender bias in the workplace. Her guests will be very experienced workers' compensation law attorneys, Crystal Schoenfelder and Jason Marcus. So I hope you will join her. I'll be back the following week. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.